Yeah, I mean, I feel amazing. I decided after the doctors were saying, look, you may never walk again, you may never get your feeling back, all these different things. A lot of words of doom, which I didn't particularly appreciate. But I think they probably forced me into being so determined to get up on my feet and actually learn how to do all these things that I might not be able to do.
Welcome to Ready, Set, Goal, the podcast that helps you turn your dreams into reality. We'll give you your regular dose of motivation along with our insights to help you achieve your goals. Listen in as I share conversations with awesome influential guests who will inspire us and share their secrets behind their success in achieving their goals. Are you ready to move closer to your dream goal? I'm your host, Donna Campisi. I'm an inspirational speaker, author, and adventurer. I'm excited to bring you this podcast. Are you ready? Let's do it on Ready, Set, Goal. Kirsty Salisbury is a speaker, podcaster, and coach who speaks straight from the heart. Her talks explore the topics of resilience, regrets, and how we can create opportunities through effective habits. She is so inspiring and filled with passion. We connected straight away, and I'm sure you will too. Through her own story of overcoming death and paralysis, Kirsty is inspiring many people to make meaningful change in their lives. Today, Kirsty's blends her experience as an established wellness professional, her private coaching business, and her research in the areas of resilience, habits, and long-term happiness to help empower others with practical tools and strategies to embrace living at their best. Through her podcasts, Kirsty connects with guests with practical steps and applications to living a regretless life. Kirsty is the author of two awesome and inspiring books, A Life by Design and Let's Talk Life Design, Personal Stories and Strategies of Overcoming Crisis. Kirsty has called me her stroke sister, and I accept that with pride. We'll probably talk about that later. She's based in Auckland, New Zealand. Kirsty loves being active, traveling, and spending time with her family. Hey, it's awesome to see you, Kirsty. Welcome.
Thanks, Donna. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, I know. We haven't spoken for a little while because you're super busy. I can never catch up with you now. What's going on?
Yeah, generally. I think it's the way we all are. Yeah, having fun though, not just busy.
Yeah, that's true. Busy can be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, as you know, this podcast is about goals, and I always like to start with what you would call or say is your most outstanding goal that you've ever achieved.
That I've ever achieved.
What's the one that you're most proudest of?
Yeah, I love this question because straight off the bat, I'm thinking I hate goals. I'm really anti-goals, and so I don't fit into any boxes. I tell you what, if there's something that I can make something difficult, I'm going to. Not intentionally, it's just the way that I roll. So I'm anti-goals, but there's been quite a few significant things. So you covered a little bit in my introduction there. I've been through some pretty big challenges in life. Mm. I've had some really interesting times. Going right through from a major illness when I was younger took me right to my deathbed. And I always say a little bit further than my deathbed because I was gifted with this most beautiful experience, which is what we call a near-death experience. Mm. And then I came back to this body, which wasn't working correctly. And, you know, all of these things, these words, these hard things that I had to face. And I decided that, no, I had a bigger purpose in life. And so overcame that and managed to push through many, many hard, I guess you call them goals back then, lots of little steps that I had to go through to get to where I am today. So there's lots of things like that. There's also lots of parts of my journey where I've had to consistently push outside my comfort zone. And I don't know if you call them goals either, but times when I've had to push really hard to achieve what I wanted to achieve, to face fear, to do the hard work that nobody wants to do to get where I wanted to be.
Well done.
So, yeah, that probably doesn't answer your question whatsoever.
Well, we can delve into that more if you like. I'll do sneaky questions to find out, don't you worry. But this is more of a chat and a conversation, what I really like to do on my podcast. And
I want to share with our listeners, you call us stroke sisters, which I love. Can you tell the listeners why? What's your story? Let's delve into that more.
Okay. Yep. So the reason we're stroke sisters is I, like Donna, had a stroke. So when I was 12 years old, I just had my 12th birthday a couple of weeks beforehand. Actually, we're coming up to my 30-year anniversary of this. So very exciting time coming up next week. I was a competitive gymnast. I had hit my head on the bars the couple of days beforehand. We'll never know if this is what triggered what happened or whether it's even related. But I remember hitting my head quite hard on the bars, thinking, ouch, that really hurts. I was at school at the time, ended up going back to class after the lunch break, sitting there thinking that my head really hurt. Wow. Within 48 hours, I had a major brain illness. So my brain, I had an AVM on my brain, so an arterial venous malformation. So for everyday language, what this means is that I had a slightly deformed brain that before I was born, my brain hadn't formed correctly. So just like somebody who potentially, you know, maybe they have a deformed hand or a foot or something which you can physically see on the outside, that was the case for my brain. So it was very, very small. But it was enough that within 48 hours of me hitting my head, the blood pressure was beginning to build, and it built so much that the vessels couldn't take it anymore. They burst. I had a full brain bleed. And I remember this very, very clearly. I remember the pain. I remember waking up in the middle of the night thinking something's not right. The pain hurts. I then tried to get out of bed and collapsed on the floor. And I mean, you'll know for sure, Donna, this is what happens when your body doesn't work properly. So because of the bleeding, I then had a stroke. My mother heard me crashing about on the floor because I was trying to get up because I wasn't feeling very well. So I was thinking I needed to get to the bathroom. So I was thrashing about on the floor trying to get up because my right side still worked fine. So I was literally hanging onto my bed leg, like the post of the bed, trying to pull my weight up. And every time I'd just crash because I hadn't worked out that when I put the weight on my foot, my left foot, that I was going to fall again. So my mother heard me crashing about in the bedroom. She came and found me collapsed on the floor. And I said, my head hurts so badly. I've got this headache. So she then took me off into the spare bedroom and she spent the night with me in the bedroom looking after me, making sure that I was okay. Over that time, there's a whole spiritual experience that happened here. Very beautiful, very confusing, but beautiful. I ended up going into a coma. So when the morning came around, my family knew that I'd had the headache. They knew that I wasn't feeling well. I'd been a bit sick in the night and things like that. They then couldn't wake me up. And so, you know, they were freaking out about that. Scary. And they phoned the doctor. I've got this beautiful little girl now. She's 10 years old now and she's my miracle girl. And I just think, wow, if that was her, I don't know how I would have coped. I don't know how I would have reacted because
you would have, though.
Scary. Yeah, you would have, you kick in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how I'm sort of the same, but I actually don't even have children, but I look at my parents and think as an adult now, wow, what did they go through and think about, because at the time you're a child and you're in it, you're kind of not really thinking about that, I suppose. You just are dealing with what you've got. So I understand that. And yeah, you as a parent would kind of think it even more so, like you're saying with your daughter. It's pretty scary for them as well. And siblings, I think. I don't know if you've got siblings, but
yeah, I had a brother. He got a little bit neglected in his time, I think. I don't know if neglected is the right word, but you know, I became the priority and suddenly the whole world was about me. My world was about me. My parents' world was about me. He was staying with friends. So what happened is I went into the coma and my parents couldn't wake me up. They called the doctor. The doctor came around and within minutes he was panicking. He was saying, quick, get her off to hospital. So they phoned an ambulance and then they tried to get a helicopter and there was no helicopter available. But, you know, it's like what you see in the movies. That's how I imagine it. I've got a slightly excited imagination. So I'm imagining the panic and the rush, get this girl to hospital. So they got me there straight into surgery. They gave me emergency brain surgery because they obviously found out, they did a scan and found out that I had this AVM on my brain and that there was blood filling up in my brain. So emergency surgery, they had to resuscitate me on the operating table. I did go to the brink of death on the operating table. Again, that's a whole nother story. Then they brought me back. Same thing happened. They tried again, brought me back. And then they realized at that point they could no longer complete the surgery because I would not get through it.
Yeah.
So they aborted the surgery. And then I woke up in the critical care unit about, I think it was 5 days later, out of my coma.
Yeah.
And I woke up with tubes everywhere. They're up my nose, they're in my mouth. They were everywhere. Mm. And I woke up to literally a whole new life ahead of me because now I was paralyzed down one side. I'd had a full stroke. So this is where, Donna, you're my stroke sister. I mean, you don't meet people every day who have been through what we've been through. And when I do, I feel a very strong connection. Mm. And so, yes, stroke sister is just kind of this name that I've come up with.
And I like it. I like it.
I really like it too. And I don't have many stroke sisters, put it that way.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's a really good thing. It's a really good thing. But in saying that, I feel so blessed and so lucky by everything that's happened to me. I woke up to this life ahead of me because they'd had to abort the surgery. So we still had the problem in my brain. They found multiple AVMs. It wasn't just one. Mm. So then there was this journey of what do we do? Because they knew they couldn't operate again. There was no technology. We're talking nearly 30 years ago now, 30 years ago next week. And medical technology today, this is probably nothing. But back then,
yes,
you know, they just didn't have the equipment. They didn't have the ability to look at, you know, x-rays were limited. So I ended up going on and having some surgery in the UK. I had to fly over to the UK from New Zealand. And I mean, that was terrifying. Would I die on a plane? Let's find out. We don't know, but there's no other option. I was diagnosed a walking time bomb.
Yeah.
Couldn't do anything. We're talking about a girl at the age of 12 who was a competitive gymnast, had so much energy. Like I would bounce around the house. My mum and dad were just like, can you just sit still? But I couldn't. I could not sit still. I was absolutely wired as a child. So telling a child who's been through that, has that type of manner about them, do nothing to raise your heartbeat, do nothing to raise your blood pressure, do nothing basically. So I learnt how to sit very still. It was really scary because we didn't know what was going to happen, but we knew the problems were still there. We knew that what I'd been through, you know, that could all just happen again. There was no knowing what would go on. So every day when I woke up, it's like, will I get through today?
So you were told that as a child, you were told that it could happen again.
Oh, absolutely. That was the panic, was because they hadn't actually been able to resolve the problem in surgery.
Yeah.
So I then had another, I've got to work out the time. So it happened in April and then the following September was when I flew to the UK. So that's quite that's nearly a year and a half, I'd say, when I went over to the UK and had the surgery. So they gave me two options. One was that I had to wear this frame. I can show you some photos, Donna, which you can include into this.
Yeah,
To wear this head frame. And they said, right, we can attach this head frame. The idea of the frame was that the frame would be on my head to hold my head still, and then that would be attached to the operating table.
Can I ask you what year this happened?
This was 1990.
Okay, so it wasn't as far away as I thought. So I'm wondering what the technology and what they would do now. Would they still stick your head in a frame like that? I was thinking of a neck brace, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, see, so I'm not 100% sure. I know. So I had stereotactic radiation. That was the precursor to these days they have gamma knife therapy.
Okay.
So it's very similar. It's laser beams that are all focused down into a point. And the idea is that they obliterate the problem and then it flushes out through your bloodstream. They had to do it within like micromillimeter precision because we're talking laser beams.
Yeah.
So they had to literally fix me to a table. Yeah. So they gave me these two options. I could have the frame through bolts in my neck, like if you're thinking Frankenstein, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they could attach them through my teeth. So I was like, okay, I'll go for the teeth option because I didn't fancy having Frankenstein scars for the rest of my life. I was, you know, I'd been through a bit already. I was already thinking, you know, I've got this funky haircut.
Be a conversation starter.
Yes, how did you get those? Exactly. So about that time that you had bolts through your neck. Yeah. So I chose for the teeth option. So they literally, I couldn't have any dental work. I had very different teeth after my surgery. I then had complications because I developed quite severe epilepsy for a while. Sorry, I'm losing my words, which what happens when you have brain surgery. It has to be, right? The medication for the epilepsy meant that my gums started to recede. Okay. And they showed me all this hideous photos down at the dental clinic of what my teeth could look like and how my gums could literally come back into my mouth. And it was just horrific.
Wow.
So I couldn't have any dental treatment, even though I had really, really bad wonky teeth. I'd had these receding gums had started a little bit. There was all sorts going on. So they ended up attaching this frame to my teeth and it went around my whole head and attached on here. And wow. Then that had little screw holes. They screwed me to a table, bolted me to a table. And then they basically, the machine, the radiation therapy, nuked down onto my brain, into the problem AVM areas, to dissolve them all. And this was in the UK. We had a 2-month stint over there. I went over with my mother. Obviously, the whole family couldn't travel. That was the only place that they were doing it at the time.
Yeah.
And I was just so lucky because the treatment worked for me. Which, you know, I've spoken to people where it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
But that treatment basically obliterated the problem. It all dissolved, it went out, and within a couple of months, I was, I guess you'd say AVM free. I still had issues. I was still learning how to use my body.
Yeah.
We still knew that there were definitely risks associated. Mm. But last year, about 6 months ago now, I had another, I have regular angiograms to check my brain. I don't know if you have those, Donna, where they put a tube in your groin and ink up into your brain.
No, I don't have. I used to have, you know, see the heart specialist and, you know, have the cardio thing. Oh, I can't even, know the language anymore. Yeah. You know, they put all this stuff on your chest and whatever. I had a heart murmur and I'm not sure if that's what I think our stories can be similar, but different as well. I didn't have surgery. I'm lucky.
Yeah.
I didn't have surgery, but a whole heap of other complications. Whereas, because people always ask, how did the stroke happen? But I had all sorts of other things. I don't know what came first and, you know, whether one thing led to another or, you know, it all happened at once. Do you know what I mean? So it's
exactly
hard to explain. And really, even asking, oh, why did it happen or how did it happen, it's just not going to fix things for now. So I'm not particularly concerned, you know, because sometimes people want reasons and who to blame and stuff like that. It's just not that situation. Like,
it is what it is, right?
Yeah, and you just live with it and you've lived with it the best way you can. And I want to explain to people and want you to explain to people probably more so because I can see you, people can't hear. Tell us what you're physically like because I look at you and I think, you know, I wouldn't see anything.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
So tell me specifically what you feel then to explain your differences, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel amazing. I decided after the doctors were saying, look, you may never walk again, you may never get your feeling back, all these different things. A lot of words of doom, which I didn't particularly appreciate. Mm. But I think they probably forced me into being so determined to get up on my feet and actually learn how to do all these things that I might not be able to do.
Mm.
So I spent a lot of time. I then got a really big complex about everything that had happened to me. I became very ashamed. I was embarrassed. I had a lot of negative stuff associated to who I was as a person because I'd been through this experience. So to combat that, what I actually ended up doing was trying to be the absolute best, push my body the absolute hardest that it could. So not only did I learn how to walk again, I learned how to run and how to jump and how to do this and do that. And I went back to a very basic level of gymnastics, because I felt like that was taken away from me, that was cut short.
Yes.
And I've always been active. I've always been in the gym. Today I do CrossFit. So, you know, looking at me, you can't actually tell that there's much wrong. You yeah. would see it when you do a CrossFit session though, because I have to sub so many things, because obviously my hand can't necessarily grip things the same way, or,
yes.
you know, my brain, the connection's not there. I don't know how to do something. So physically, I'm absolutely great. I live a completely normal life. I can drive. I've got my daughter, who's my miracle girl, who they said I should never even attempt to have.
Yeah.
And I like to push limits. So we talked about it and then decided that we would push that limit. It was a little scary. I've also got something going on with my heart, similar to you.
Mm.
And I do have constant numbness down my left side.
Okay.
So when I'm fatigued or tired, I start to limp. Mm. When I'm wearing heels, I always limp. So people can see me in different situations. If I go to an event and speak, or at a meeting or something like that, where I've got heels and a bit dressed up, they can see that I limp. But then when you see me in my gym gear and I'm running around, they're like, "I thought you had a limp." And I'm like, "Well, it's different shoes."
Mm.
I wear through my shoes so quickly, but only on the left side. So that's quite funny. I always need to buy one shoe, but that doesn't really work, does it? So well, I've got a lot of right shoes. There's nothing wrong with them, but the left ones are just destroyed.
That's so funny. Maybe I should grab yours, because my destroyed side is my right side.
Oh, we could set up a system if we just buy the same shoes.
But I unfortunately have to have a heel lift, because it happened when I was much younger. So the growth difference was... you know, I obviously grew more on the left side and so forth. So
yeah,
I did in that way. But I am interested because, yeah, I mean, with through all of this, how do you manage to keep motivated? Because there's going to be some rough times that you went through. So what particularly is the thing that kept you motivated?
I think it probably all started for me back when I was in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So hearing these words that I couldn't do things, or I wouldn't, or I might not, I really got, I guess I just got a bit of grit on. I was really like, no, you don't tell me that. I want to know if that's true. So I want to see whether what you're saying is actually right or wrong, rather than just taking it for doctor's word and they're the experts. I wanted to prove that I could, or prove that I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I can remember very, very clearly, I talk about this in my book that I have, I remember very clearly my father coming in. So he'd come in the mornings to sit in the hospital with me, and he was he was very, very affected. We couldn't talk about a lot of this for a long time after I was okay and out of the hospital. Mm. But he'd come in and sit next to me on the bed, and we'd talk about different things. And I put him in a place where, if anyone's going to encourage me, he's going to. If anyone's got my back, he's got it.
Mm.
So I said to him one day when he came in, the doctors had told me a whole lot of stuff, and I was really upset, like devastated upset. And I was like, no one tells me that. Mm. And I said to him, every day you come in, I'm going to show you something new.
Mm.
And as I'm saying the words to him, I'm thinking, what the heck? I'm lying in a hospital bed paralyzed. What on earth could I show him new tomorrow that I can't do today? And he really stood by me on this.
Yeah.
And it started to become the littlest things. So it might be that I could twitch a finger, or when I was brushing my teeth with my right hand, that I could get it around the side of the left side of the mouth or something like that. There was just the tiniest things, because I was always looking for, what is the next thing I can show my dad? He's coming in today. What am I going to show him? And there were times when I was really struggling to find anything, but it really made me see over a week or over 2 weeks, the progress that was happening.
Mm.
And I knew that if I could maintain that, then I could do anything. Mm. So I very much, even today, live very much by the concept that it's the little things we do today that make the big things tomorrow.
Mm.
The smallest things become the biggest things. And definitely, if we want success in our life, what are the tiniest, like smidgenest little things that we can do to get us towards there?
Yeah. I call it baby steps. Yeah. So everyone has their different words for it, but I think it's similar to what we're thinking and talking about. Yeah, because it's only those small things that lead to the great things that you're saying. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Mm. I love that you talk about baby steps as well, because I think, you know, we hear it quite often when a baby's learning how to walk, and if they fall over, they don't discriminate themselves, and we're there cheering them on. Yeah, you can do it. Come on, try again. And we've got our arms out and we're trying to help them, and we don't look at them and go, oh, you fell down.
Yeah, stay there. Don't worry about it.
Just don't walk for the rest of your life. And yet we do this in so many areas of our own lives. So
we change so much as adults in our way of thinking, or just and giving up. And I spoke to someone yesterday actually who said that, you know, we were talking about goals and things like that, and he just said, well, I don't have a fear of failure. And yeah, I was just really impressed by that, because a lot of us do. And and as adults, we tend to do that. Whereas as kids, like you're saying, the toddler learning to walk and stuff like that, they'll fall down, giggle even, and then just get up again and all that sort of stuff.
I love not having the fear of failure, because I think for me, I didn't have the fear of failure. Well, I did have the fear of being stuck in the state that I was in. I didn't do anything I could. Why are we afraid of failure? Why do we care so much about failure? And what is failure? Failure is an emotional thing, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Just like I think success is an emotional thing, because if we feel successful, we are. Because success means different things to different people. Failure means different things to different people.
Mm.
It's an interesting thing. But even today, in my life today, I have really big dreams. I have really big aspirations of things. And I'm a bit of a dreamer. That's because great. I believe anything is possible.
Yeah,
but we have to be realistic and understand that it starts with the tiniest little things. So awesome. I'm now what we call a tiny habits. I'm a certified tiny habits coach, and I'm actually teaching other people how to do this as well now.
Okay, yeah, because you've just like led into what I was going to ask about. You are a coach, and I really wanted to for you to explain. Because there's coach is used in all areas of life, and I know you're really physical, and I just wondered, what areas do you actually coach in? Is it more mental, physically? Explain.
Well, you're going to love this, because I'm all sorts of types of coaches. So I started off as a wellness coach. That came out of my drive. That means to get people well and healthy, whether it's through nutrition or exercise, to get your body to that place of optimum. Living. I started that off from that fear of not being good enough. People might notice that I'm not fast enough, the hiding my situation, which I touched on briefly. I then realized, as I'm doing wellness coaching, that 90% of my clients, their issues are more about their lifestyle, and so their wellness isn't on form, because that's a reaction to things in their lifestyle. So I trained as a life coach.
Okay.
And I trained as a life coach, and I started doing that. I do a lot of different things in life. I'm coaching my life coach clients, and I'm talking about regretless living, about eliminating regret, because we're all going to die. We're all going to have this experience where we're at the end of our lifetime. Mm. And how are we going to feel about, you know, how we've spent our moments, the people that are being close to us, what we're focused on, and what we leave behind. Mm. So the more I talk about this, incorporated with my near-death experience, I've got a very, very strong fascination around death.
Yeah.
Then people started coming to me and going, oh, I know you're a life coach, but could you coach me around death? So I'm a death coach. So I help people who are either at the end stages of their life, maybe they've had a diagnosis and they're coming to terms with their life has finite time, they're about to die in the coming weeks or months, things like that. Or it might be a family who have had a diagnosis to one of their family members.
Mm.
And then how as a family can they support the person who's going through the dying process?
Wow.
So I'm doing the wellness coaching. I then do the life coaching. More recently, I do the death coaching. And as I'm seeing all of this, it keeps coming back to this point of regretless living. How do we live a life where we're so satisfied and happy with it that when we get to the end of it, we don't have regrets. And I believe that comes, just like I was talking about earlier, from the tiniest moments.
Yeah.
So I wrote my book. I've been doing a lot of public speaking around this concept. I've called it the 1 degree concept, where the 1 degree of change makes the biggest difference. And the obvious, story you can use for that is getting on a plane. So I live in New Zealand. If I get on a plane and it's going 1 degree off course and I'm doing a long haul flight,
yes,
the place where I land is entirely different from the weather, the geographical location, the currency, the language. Everything would be completely different over a long haul flight with 1 degree of change. So then if we can incorporate that into our life and find that 1 degree of change in our life, and we can maintain that over a period of time, where is it we want that degree to be facing? Where do we want to be going? What do we want to achieve? How do we want to create change in our life? And then it's breaking it down into those tiniest, tiniest moments. So that's where the tiny habits comes in. I've studied under BJ Fogg, who is a professor at Stanford. He's a behavior scientist.
Yeah.
And he has the tiny habits method, the Fogg method. And so this has been really interesting to actually get some practical science behind what I've already put into practice and what I absolutely believe is a great way to achieve success in life. Mm. So that's where I got certified. It was through him. And now really I just help people with all different angles, but it's all about living that life that they've got everything they want to get out of it. They've got their relationships on track. They've got the positive memories to leave behind, the legacy, and they die with no regrets.
Wow, that must be such and good on you. And that must be such a emotional ride for you. How do you stay? I don't know. Well, I don't know about you, but I am when I hear stories and so forth, and I probably relate it to my experiences too, because I've had, you know, close deaths in my family and experiences of my own. Mm-hmm. How do you disconnect, I suppose? Is that the right word? Like from
yeah,
that?
I get what you're saying. I think I just love the fact that I'm able to help people to process some of this. I mean, death for starters, it's not something over this side of the world that we talk about until it happens.
Yeah.
And so I really want to change the conversation on death, change the way that we look at it, release the fear of death.
Is it more preparing people?
Yeah, there is that, but also just the general conversation.
Mm.
I think this comes from my own experience, my own near-death experience. I run a near-death experience podcast, which has taught me so incredibly much about life as well as death.
Yeah.
And I guess a lot of it is my spiritual beliefs. I don't believe that this life, when it finishes, is the end.
Neither do I.
So as I'm helping these people, I'm almost a little bit excited for them with the potential of what's coming up, because I've had a glimpse of it and I just think there's so much there. But I understand, you know, we are here on earth in our bodies, and that the grief will be extremely real. The process is extremely real. But I think I continue to keep myself grounded with what I believe my purpose is, what I believe I'm meant to be doing in my moments. And I do keep a level of separation so that I don't get into their stories and into their experiences so strongly. I like to ground myself regularly, and that, you know, I've got this beautiful chair. This was my father's chair guide as well. I inherited this beautiful chair, and it's a little bit old and broken, but I just love it. And I sit in this chair and I just think and I process and I meditate and I just let go and I just say, what is it that I'm meant to be doing? And a question that I often ask people is, what is life inviting you to do? Which I think is a really beautiful thing. So I've answered your question a long way, if nothing
that's
else.
Okay. But I love it.
I keep a little boundary. I ground myself and I try and stay very, very connected with, what is my purpose? Why am I alive? Why am I here? And how can I help others? So,
That's amazing. I want to ask you as well, what's the most rewarding thing that you gain from helping people in these areas? What do you, is there one thing that just like, okay, I've done my job and that's really rewarding for me personally as well as for the person that you're working with? What would you find?
That's a brilliant question, because so often I'm just focused on giving to them and trying to help people through what they're going through. I think when it really connects and you see that somebody really gets something, it's interesting, because I don't particularly care if people lose weight or if they, you know, the physical side of things, that sounds really cold and nasty, especially if that's what they've come for help for. But when I see somebody, the light goes on and they really get something which is a lot deeper than that.
Yeah.
That is shift. Super rewarding. That shift, that mindset change, the ability to think bigger picture, or I don't word it very well at all.
No, but that's just some, I get what you're saying. Well,
the light goes on.
Yeah, and am I correct in saying that change just in the end helps the areas that they've come for anyway, as in
Absolutely.
The weight loss and all that sort of thing?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's what you're saying?
Yeah because that's what you see when they get that mindset change, or when the light goes on, it changes every area of their life. They become more connected. I talk a lot about living consciously, and that is connecting with our current moments, understanding why do we do what we do. We've got habits and routines right throughout our day. From little things like, I don't know, the way that we go and have a coffee every day. Will we get in our car? Do we turn the radio on? Do we turn on a podcast? What do we have for breakfast? Do we have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee? Yeah. You know, there's so many things. And I'm not saying anything is right or wrong, because I don't necessarily see things that way. But if we can connect with why we do it, is it out of habit? Is it out of necessity? Is it out of desire? Is it because we just always do what we always do? That's just how it is. But when we can connect with conscious moments and understand how we're living our life, for me, that's where the regret disappears. That's where we eliminate these things which can linger and hold us back in life. So, yeah, I mean, there's so much to it, but I just love it when people connect with their current moments. And then, like you're saying, they might decide to change things a little bit. And as a result, they start to lose weight. They start to exercise more, start to feel healthier. And it's not a willpower thing. They don't need to be all motivated. It's just what happens.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, can you tell us more about your books? You have two major books that are awesome, A Life by Design and Let's Talk Life Design. They've got, you know, similar things in their title, but are they similar books? Like, what's the difference between the two?
So the first book is A Life by Design. So this is how to... Oh my goodness, this is so bad. It's my book. And here I am. I'm struggling with the title. This is what brain surgery does to you. It's how to change your circumstances regardless of how to create your best future regardless of your current circumstances. That's terrible, isn't it? Anyway, this is my story. This is a lot of the story that I've just shared with you about me going through my illness, my surgery, my rehabilitation, then my surgery over in the UK. Coming back, it's about me learning all these concepts, the time with my father, about being committed, getting the accountability.
Yeah.
Things that I learned through my experience. It does cover my near-death experience as well.
Yeah.
And then Let's Talk Life Design is stories, other people's stories of overcoming crisis moments. And Donna, you'll know this because you are one of these stories and I love that you're part of this book.
Yeah, thank you.
So it's eight people's stories about their crisis moments.
Things
that they've been through. So there's a major car accident. There's a cancer diagnosis. Donna, you've got your story with your stroke. There's a man who was held up at gunpoint and how that just reignited everything for him.
I really enjoyed it because there was people at so many different stories. Like, everyone has their own unique story anyway, but they weren't similar. They were from different, circumstances.
And they were from all over the world. All over the world, different stories, different things, because we all have crisis moments. None of us get through this without them. But I think a lot of it is about how we respond. So the idea behind the Let's Talk Life Design is the stories of the crisis moment, what the individual did to overcome their moments, how they got, I guess it's a resilience point of view.
Yes.
But also for somebody who might be reading the book, how do they incorporate that into their life if they're going through a crisis moment?
Yeah.
So there's the sharing of stories, but also the lessons learned. And that's a key thing for me, is to help people to empower themselves.
So would you say your first book about yourself is a how-to book, or is it more of a story of your journey, or both?
It's definitely both. It's got my story in there, but it does also have how-to. It's got some little charts that you can fill in, and it's got how-to with what could be your tiny habits challenging questions at the end of the chapters. It's got little questions that you can process and think about. So it's a bit of both. So my story is one book, and then the other book is 8 stories. So they're obviously a lot shorter, not the same amount of detail. And I think they're both self-help. They're both stories plus activities and ways that you can inspire yourself.
Oh, awesome. So for people who are listening, who's this book for?
It's for anyone who wants to make change in their life, anyone who wants to create their future moments. So like I'm talking about these tiny habits, it's understanding how they can grow and how we can focus on different areas of our life to get what we want, because I believe we can create anything. So what we put our time into now, what we invest our emotion, our focus, our energy into, that's growing that thing. We're going to have more of that in the future. So it's about getting consciously connected. So anybody who wants to create change, this book's suitable for. It's also really suitable for anyone who's been through a crisis time. So maybe you're experiencing some hardship or there's a family situation, an accident, a health scare, or a health, something more than a scare. It's for those types of people who are looking for how do I change my life, and also understanding that we can change our life. We have the power to change our circumstances.
Awesome. I could talk with you for ages. I love it. I want to ask if you could go back, Kirsty, with this whole challenge that you experienced. What advice would you give the younger Kirsty? What would you whisper in her ear and tell her?
What I know now. Gosh, that's a really hard one for me, because I was gung-ho. I was just charge ahead. I think there's probably a little bit more element of self-love and accepting myself, because I didn't talk about my illness for 27 years. It was such a long time, and it was the hardest thing. And now I'm like, what was I worried about? But back then, I was stuck in this jail. I'd built this beautiful jail around myself.
Yeah.
And I think if I would do that, if I could go back to me when I'm younger, just say everything's okay. Just love yourself a little bit more. Connect into the purpose, the source. Some people would say God. Connect into what's really important in life. And just love yourself.
Yeah.
I've come a long way in the last 4 years. So
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well done. Well, this could be the same answer, I'm not sure, with this question, but because the word that you don't like is goals. What what advice would you share to others who are thinking of going for their new big scary challenge, say, instead of goal?
Yeah. I would say break it down.
Yeah.
Break it down into the smallest things. Yeah. The smallest things are the biggest things. And I'm sounding a little bit like a broken record. I'm aware of that, but it does come back to that. Yeah. If someone's going to step into something new, it is going to be scary. It is going to be unknown, but just one foot in front of the other. And I think listen to what's going on inside. If we feel a lot of resistance inside, then that can often be, you know, saying something bigger. So as
that's
we
good
go
advice,
through our
actually.
Moments,
yeah.
Listen, connect. And that's where my chair comes in great handy. I sit in it and I connect with what I'm doing. How does this feel? Should I keep going? Should I go this way or this way or this way? Because there's so many options of things we can do.
True.
But also just understanding if we just keep going one foot instead in front of the other, we don't need to know the big destination. Will we get to that big goal, scary place that we want to achieve? We don't know, but imagine the journey along the way, how beautiful that can be if we are aligned with what we're doing and doing it consciously. So start off tiny, don't be afraid of what happens, but also connect in with yourself and the bigger picture.
Yeah. I love it. Hey, can I ask who inspires you and why? Well, who's your superhero?
My superhero is my dad.
Yeah,
my father.
I thought you were going to say that.
I know. Yeah, you know, because we had a really turbulent relationship when I was younger. So we went through this experience. Things weren't so great in my later teen years. We had a bit of headbutting going on. Things weren't so great. We resolved that. He was diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
And he was told he was terminal, had 3 months to live. Mm. And so this may be as well why I'm so passionate about regretless living.
Mm.
Because I watched my father face everything in his life, address everything that was behind him but also ahead of him. And I watched him make really wise, beautiful decisions.
Yeah.
And he was on quite a bit of medication, which may have helped the scenario, but we ended up resolving all of our issues, just becoming, he was my best friend at the end. He was just my hero. And I felt very connected with him spiritually before he went. He was actually in my near-death experience, which is very, very unusual to have a living person in one. I believe he's come to communicate with me since. I feel very connected to him, even though he has died and moved on. But the messages, I just get these glimpses and these memories of things throughout my life, the times when I was in the hospital and he was there to support me. My mum's amazing, don't get me wrong, I love my mum, we're very, very close. But it comes back, my dad is my inspiration. I hear his voice all the time, little things. I was doing a workout this morning and he was going, "You don't give up, do you?" And I'm going, "I don't give up," because I really wanted to give up. So little things like that. He's my inspiration. I get inspiration all around me. There's inspiration everywhere. But I think a lot for me comes from within. A lot comes from a spiritual place within.
Yeah.
And yeah, my dad is my hero. He always will be.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. We've covered so much, and I know we're cut for time, but is there anything else that you, before we finish, that you really want to share with our listeners?
I think, yeah, you say we've covered so much. We've only just started to get into it, really.
I know. I know you haven't got a lot of time. I could talk to you for ages, but yeah.
That's the thing, and I could talk for ages. That's the thing.
We have to continue this. We have to come back and do another.
Yeah, round two, I think.
Because there are other questions that I wanted to ask you, but I know that, yeah, the time issue is on not on our side.
That's okay. I know... I think we've covered the things that I truly just feel really are important today.
Yeah.
The little things, the pushing forward. We have the power to create anything. And it doesn't mean it will happen straight away. There will be bumps in the road and distractions and where everything looks like it's against us. But we can achieve anything, is my belief.
Yeah.
So this has just been beautiful. I've loved chatting. And Donna, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I've loved chatting too. Hey, look, I've got to ask my last question though. It's only short. Do you have a favorite quote or mantra when aiming for your goals, shall I say?
That goals thing.
I'm paranoid to say that to you now.
That's all right. I have loads of mantras, if you want to call them quotes, that I love. But one that I really do think resonates with me a lot is, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
You're right. I love
that. So that's
that
from Henry Ford. Yes. And it's so true.
I mention that all the time. I mention it all the time when I do my keynotes. And also, I've mentioned it in my book. So, yes, we are agreed on that one. I love that one too. Yeah. It's such
so
a mindset.
True. It's about
thing.
A mindset.
Yeah.
It's about what we believe. And if we don't believe it, how can we change what we believe? How can we create it? Because when we start to get the wheels in action and we start to see the results or the success coming through, it's easy to start believing then. Mm. But how do we change? How do we create that environment where we can believe, you know, what's good for us? And
I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, me too. It's a good one.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Hey, I want to mention your website, of course, if anyone wants to contact you, Kirsty, or get your books. That's at kirstysalisbury.com. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right. Yeah,
I'm going to leave the link also on the show notes for those of you who are, you know, on the train, you know, making a coffee, whatever. there is, yeah, is no reason that you can't go back to the show notes and readysetgoalpodcast.com and take the links and so forth to definitely contact Kirsty, because I have heard you speak and I have read your books and I just highly recommend. And the coaching sounds just amazing, and that you could help many people. So well done.
I like to hope so.
Yeah.
Thank you, Donna. I'm very happy to hear from people. I love getting emails, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Bye for now.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Ready, Set, Goal podcast with Donna Campisi. Do you know someone else who could benefit from learning how to turn their dream into reality and help make a plan to achieve their goals? Please take a moment to share this and other episodes via your podcast app, email, or social media channels. Each share helps us reach listeners just like you who can benefit from our content.